On this episode of Industry Relations, Rob and I discuss the recent Clarity 24 event and arranged marriages. Let's go.
This is Industry Relations, a podcast that's at the intersection of real estate and technology from an insider's perspective with Rob Hahn and Greg Robertson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with Rob and Greg. This is your co-host, the Notorious Rob. As always with me, the fabulous Greg Robertson.
Hola, Rob.
Hola. I like that. That like Clark Kent move. Like
it's a Clark Kent.
Yeah, Clark Kent to Superman.
I don't know. Again, I'm always doing this about my hair, but God damn, getting gray. Jesus.
I mean, welcome to old age, man. Like I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
It sucks, but it's better than the alternative. That's what I always say.
Yeah. Well, I'm off site right now. I'm actually in the Great Northwest, a little south of Seattle. I'm at my sister's house here, but
right on.
I did the audio check, so hopefully I don't have my microphone, but hopefully everybody can hear me.
You
okay,
sound
but
great. You sound great.
Good.
But hey, you know, we're gonna dive right in because we already missed last week. You know, and
yeah, sorry about
apologize
that,
to everyone. Travel life, it does get in the way. We probably should have let you know in advance, but we didn't, and that's on us. We'll probably not
on
let
me.
You know the next time it happens because, you know, we're just busy people living
winging
those
it.
But one of the reasons, of course, is that you're at the annual – is it – like what do they call it? Is it called Core Logic now? Is it Clarity?
No, it's they called it Clarity 24.
Okay.
And MLS Executive Workshop, I think, is the thing.
Yeah. But we call it the Clarity event. You know, that's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's been going on for years and years and years. They do a really great job out there in Scottsdale. I did not attend because I typically don't attend those, but you did. And did you speak?
I didn't speak there, no.
Okay.
I think I was one of those guys, like, if something happened to one of the other presenters, they would break the glass.
Right.
And I would appear from the lobby bar.
Right.
And I'd, you know, jump on a stage. So
that's right. And I think there were some interesting conversations I had, so I figured we'd start with, you know, sort of your review, your travelogue to Scottsdale to attend the Clarity event and to talk about the interesting things that came out of it.
Yeah. I've been going to the MLS Executive Workshop for a while. It's usually typically an invite only kind of thing.
Yep.
It was, you know, first started by Greg Larson, of course, at Clarity, and Matt Cohen, right? And you know, they used to always, back in the day, they would also do this MLS survey of like the MLS vendor system surveys. And that would be the end of the show. And like all the vendors would be like, oh, I got a 5, not a 6 or whatever the kind of thing. But when they got acquired by CoreLogic, they stopped that. So there's, and it's always been held at the Scottsdale Plaza. The thing I think that the Clarity event has always had, and I think it's really, despite it usually has great content and a lot of, you know, good conversations is it's in Scottsdale in February.
That's right.
Very smart. You know, Greg and Matt knew what the hell they were doing with that that kind of thing there. So this year was different because they moved the venue from the Scottsdale Plaza. I'm not sure if it was a venue thing or a dates thing or whatever, but they wanted to go to another hotel, so we were at the Omni. And and, you know, so that was a whole different vibe than the Scottsdale Plaza. It's kind of an older facility or whatever, but they have little bungalows and stuff like that. It was kind of a different thing. So everybody was one of the staples at the Scottsdale Plaza lobby bar was they had a popcorn machine there and everybody loved the popcorn and you'd be eating that popcorn. And they stopped doing that after the pandemic, but still, you always remember that. But what they did is the production value went way up and the staging was fantastic. Something very similar to their user group meeting, which was great. They had some interviews. They had another legal update, which I want to talk about.
Sure.
You know, it's like nostalgia. I mean, I do miss the old days when Greg was running the thing with Matt. But what I will say, Davey over there, I can imagine the meetings he had to be in, like, because it's all the vendors are there and everybody, it's a very inclusive, agnostic event, as Kevin Green used to call it or calls it. And I got to applaud those guys you know, core logic, a big company, they're all competing against each other. But to have everybody there,
yep,
still meeting, they're keeping that kind of, trying to keep that Clarity vibe going. You know, big applause to Clarity for keep doing that. And I think it's a, I don't know how long they're going
to
do it for.
And to CoreLogic for allowing Claire to keep doing that, right? Because that was a very important part of our little subsector of the business, you know? So
kudos.
So, kudos all around.
Yeah.
But
before you
dive into specifics, I have a question.
Yeah, right? Sure.
What was the vibe? What was the mood? Right? Because I think this is the first major industry event after NAR November, right? So in other words, like we had Sitzer, we had NAR. You know, we had all the drama out of NAR. I feel like this is the first like major MLS gathering since the big, and then the DOJ, you know, coming in and no select, right? So what was the vibe? What was the overall mood?
It was a positive, optimistic mood. I think there was a little bit of a more of a, you know, and I think we're going to get into this. It's kind of like, okay, now we know what we're dealing with, right? We weren't sure before. DOJ's laid it on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's had a chance to, and I think that's what we'll get into here.
Sure.
Of thinking about, okay, and we've had our own quick reactions after, because we just, we recorded like, you know, hours after that almost.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a little bit more of, I would say, a little more defiant, right? Okay.
Ooh,
so they've been whatever. And I think people are starting to go, okay, well, you know, we understand what you're saying, DOJ, but you know, really? Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And I think people are getting a little bit more their feet underneath them. That's what I felt. More optimistic. I mean, maybe that was like more the vibe I got from the legal update. It's like, you know, hey, you can't just you know, tell people how they're supposed to run their business. And you know, if you really look into like what they were saying was happening in Washington was a complete lie. Or, you know, wasn't, you know, not, I wouldn't say lie, but, you know, didn't really tell the whole story.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of that kind of thing going on there, right? So, I'm optimistic and, you know, yeah.
Okay. So let's start with the legal update since you mentioned it. It seems like that's where a lot of the action was, at least for, you know, from your perspective. Who gave the legal update and what was the overall?
It was Ed Zorn and, was it Claude is the other guy's name?
Yeah, Claude Cypher. Yep.
Yeah. So, and Mitch. Mitch was there as well.
Okay.
Right. So they kind of did a tag team kind of through there, right? And the nice thing here is that they gave kind of an update what was going on, but also talked about, you know, some solutions, right? So Ed Zorn is now pushing, and I think Mitch is on board with this, is this kind of concessions-based thing, which, you know, he was on our pod, right? Where you can put in the concessions about the seller putting these things in there.
Yeah.
One of the stats he had, and like a lot of people who've been critical of that type of thing, is like, well, concessions, I mean, you know, nobody wants to put concessions in this, or, you know, Ed was saying that 40% of the listing or the purchase agreements in CRMLS had concessions in them. So it's not an unusual thing, right? I mean, it's not the majority, but it's not unusual. So, so he was touting that pretty heavily. And I think there was consensus on from the panel that was a good strategy here, but they were still pushing back at like, can you tell a seller what they can do and not do? Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know,
no.
So I got into this debate
on my blog. Let's stop there real quick. And cause I wrote something about what agents should be thinking about, whatever. One of the things I threw in there was, I think because the DOJ laid its cards on the table, I said, they're going to eliminate compensation field. Right. Sellers can offer concessions, but I don't think the agent and the broker will be allowed to assist them to do that. Right. So people are like, what do you mean? Like, you can't do that. Like, I have duty of obedience to my seller, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, the issue here is steering. The issue has always been steering. The issue is steering. Issue will be steering. Right. So I think concessions were actually going to be fine. But like the DOJ laid out, I think they're only going to allow it during the offer phase. Like, you can't pre-signal concessions to the market, to the buyer agent. I think that's going to be the key. So when I say listing agent won't be allowed to assist, I meant you can't advertise it in advance. right? Now, if the buyer agent calls you and says, hey, I'm thinking about making an offer. Hey, look, my seller is willing to make a concession. I think that's going to be fine, because then at least we could say that steering has been minimized, right? Or has been tamped down. I don't know the answer, but that's kind of what I meant by that. So did they talk about that at all? Like the whole steering element of this?
Not really. Although I think there's consensus that steering is the issue. I mean, you've been saying this forever, right?
Forever.
And it was in their SOI thing as well. I mean, why I didn't think the concession thing would work is because in a sense of that was, you know, and I, did we talk about this anchoring kind of thing? I was talking about.
Uh-uh.
So, I mean, you know, with software or any product, right, you have, you know, good, better, best, right? That kind of thing.
Right.
And a lot of times what you're trying to do is just drive into the middle, right? So,
right.
You know, you're making those two prices to get them to there. There's also a thing of anchoring where, well, you know, I'm going to have a conversation with my seller saying, you know, we're going to need to have probably some offer to of compensation to the buyer. If a buyer's agent brings us a buyer, you know, we could be anything you want. You know, it could be 500, it could be whatever, you know, 2%, 1.5%,
but Starbucks gift
when
card.
They have that, when they have that conversation, and especially if they get it like, if they're just going to say a percentage or say an amount, that's kind of an anchor that, okay, now when they talk about their own compensation, well, they've set an anchor and expectation like this is going to be this. So it behooves them to make that a higher thing so they can say, well, we're going to give the buyer's agent this much. I should at least get that much, right?
And okay.
And I think that still keeps the steering narrative going.
Of course it
that.
Does. Of course it does. So hold on a second. Let's step back.
Hold on.
Go ahead. You finish and I'll step back. Go ahead.
Right. And so I just didn't think, you know, this concessions or whatever, they smart agents are going to do this, and it's just going to – nothing's going to change as the DOJ has said it, if you keep doing this.
Right.
And, you know, I talked to some of the attorneys off the stage. I won't say – I mean, I just told you who the names were, but I won't tell you who we're talking to. I'm like – and I just laid this out to them. And, the response was pretty much unanimous. Like, well, is anchoring illegal? Well, it's not. No, that's true. But I mean, I'm not sure if they get it, that it's the issue is steering and how do we get rid of steering. But at the same time, it's a tricky thing because you can't tell them to do something you can't force them to do something, I guess, but you want the outcome to be this. It's so hard, I think, to be able to kind of do it.
I don't think it's that hard. I mean, what everyone's leaving out of this whole thing is that every real estate agent is a licensed entity. It's a licensed profession. Steering is a problem. You just condition on the license. You can regulate commercial activity. The FTC can step in and say, make all kinds of regulations, right? So now what people would bring up is you can't tell the seller that's unconstitutional. Okay, well, nobody, like the DOJ is not saying the seller can't make offers. What the DOJ is saying is how do we eliminate steering, which simply means that we got to get to a point where the buyer is writing an offer or the buyer's agent is writing an offer and then asking for whatever you want in that offer. At that point, it just becomes a one-to-one negotiation. Do you know what I'm saying? What the DOJ is concerned about is before you get to that point, the buyer agent steering thing. So the stepping back that I had in mind was, okay, you're the listing agent. After all this is done, the next step, you go to your seller and say, hey, we're going to have to offer the buyer agent something. Why? As a listing agent, how do you justify that conversation? If the world is the buyer agent is likely to make the buyer is likely to make a request for compensation, concession of some kind in the offer. That's the part where I feel like that needs to be explained. Because you could talk about anchoring, anchoring is not illegal. That's all true. The issue is the listing agent telling the seller, hey, you're going to have to offer something to the buyer agent. What's your thinking on that? Or was there any conversation around
No. I mean, you know, we were talking ahead. I mean, a pre-podcast of like app ideas. You had a wonderful app idea.
Oh, thank
Maybe
you.
We'll share it later. But
we'll share it at the end.
but what this so reminds me of is a listing presentation, mm-hmm. right? The whole purpose of the listing presentation is, you know, introduce yourself as a professional, you know, present mm-hmm. the CMA or a suggested list price, and then, you know, yep. obviously get the listing, get them to sign yep. on the dotted line.
Yep.
With this buyer's agreement here, there is a now, there needs to be a product, yep. like a listing presentation, some yep. buyer's listing presentation where
buyer
you go through yes. a buying presentation, right? So that you go through the steps of like, okay, here's what could happen. Let's say we have one offer that's all cash and no concessions. We have another offer that's a contingent wants this. You have to show them why, you know, the smart selling agents are going to be, are going to prep their sellers to say, we might get some offers where they're going to ask for, and
right.
let me tell you why that's a good idea.
That's
because
right. That's right.
Their offer might be the strongest. You know,
that's
you
right.
want to get an all cash offer and close in 30 days.
That's
yeah,
right.
it's going to cost you a point and a half, but, or do you want to wait for this contingency guy or this guy with a lower credit or this, you know, whatever, right?
All so, true. Yep.
But that needs to be in a package like a cloud CMA. I mean, it helped the page order and the content were all designed to walk the seller through of what that was happening. It needs this. We need that same kind of thing mm-hmm, for a mm-hmm. buyer presentation.
Okay.
And now instead of the listing agreement, and now it's now because these things have to be more, and everybody agrees on that, is the buyer agreement. Oh, here's one thing too about that. All of them are total agreement that the buyer's agreements out there are, and you've written on this,
yeah.
are just ridiculously
yeah. Yeah.
greedy and just badass awful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just, yeah, that whole, all that's got to need to be blown up.
I'm
also.
So glad to hear that like Ed Zorn, CloudCypher, and you know, Mitch all agree. Current
oh,
buyer
no,
agents
totally.
Agreements all need to be redone.
It's just, it's so ridiculous. It's like
so
you
bad.
Negotiate with whatever. And if, well, if they offer me more, I'm going to take that money too. It's like, dude, come
yeah.
on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just yeah. shooting yourself in the foot again.
Yeah.
Ugh.
All right. So going back to this, like, okay, so, and the buyer agents agreement needs to be redone. The buyer presentation is going to be a real interesting thing. Right. So let's assume the agency agreement is going to be fair. Right. It's going to be fair.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. The buyer agent still now has to go and give the equivalent of a listing presentation. Listing presentation, I've seen it again. You're the expert on this, so I'll sort of defer to your judgment on it. But a lot of it is, here's my track record of performance. Right. In other words, my list-to-sell ratio is 117%. The MLS average is 92%. This is why you want to list with me, right? And I'm going to do this for you. I have drone photography. I've got this. I've got this. I've got this, right? Why you want to list with me. What's the equivalent of that for a buyer presentation, do you think?
I've successfully negotiated. You know, I want to make sure that you're in this kind of environment, right? Mm-hmm. There's a multiple offer situations. I've been in the industry for 10 years. I know all the other players in this market. I'm going to make sure your offer gets to the front of the line of that because I have those
right.
relationships. I have those ties. I have everything else. Now you're going to see a little bit different dynamic where it's like this list to sell ratio, you know, because now it behooves them to go.
The
there might be a single
list to buy.
The reverse.
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah,
list
yeah.
to buy ratio yeah. might be a bigger thing. I mean, in this market, right. it's going to be tough to kind of do that. But, you know, or it's going to be how many of my offers have gotten accepted?
Success
right?
rate or
versus
something.
That.
Hit rate.
Yeah, success
yeah, yeah.
rate. I mean, so there's a whole, again, maybe I should go back in this business again. Another. So I'm precluded from doing a CMA for non-compete reasons.
A BMA.
A BMA.
yeah.
I think we just invented a new category here.
New
on
category,
the podcast,
baby. So, somebody out there listening to this, please develop that thing. Since Greg is foreclosed from doing that, although, when's your non-compete over?
I'm not going into specific legalities here on the podcast.
Okay, so given that, like, where's the defiance? I guess is what I'm wondering. Like, I feel like that's what's going to happen.
It's like. I think my sentiment on the podcast was, as an industry, we needed to look ourselves in the mirror, right? And say, this practice has been fuzzy at best.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think the thing I mentioned on the podcast with you was, we all have our non-real estate friends, right?
Yep,
even
yep.
though we're really in this kind of thing. And I asked every single one of them, and they had no idea where the commission was, whatever. Okay, now Northwest MLS does their thing. I wonder if I went up to Northwest MLS and I asked people within the last year
mm-hmm.
if that changed. You know, with the changes they made, right?
We know it didn't. Like the DOJ
don't know
cited
if we know that.
We know they didn't. Yeah,
I mean, I might be a little hesitant because I was out to dinner last night with Justin. So, he's very adamant that they've got a good solution too. So,
sure.
I don't know for sure, but I don't think it's quite far enough, right? But the defiance is like, okay, well, we understand what you're saying, but that's not where this is going to end up. At least you know the lines here.
Sure.
This wasn't, over here wasn't good the way we used to do it. And then you want us to do it here. Okay,
right.
Respect that. But there has to be some sort of happy middle ground or happy whatever thing. And I think that's the thing there. It's like they're not just going to roll over here. Right?
So here's
and that's the vibe I got. Yeah.
So I just got emailed this article. I think Fortune just ran a story on it. And I think I saw it on Twitter the other day as well. The Richmond Fed, so that's the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, two of their staff economists released a academic paper talking about real estate commissions and what they think, quote, policymakers should do. They're staking out the position that real estate buy-side commissions should be all a la carte. Okay, meaning showing is whatever, $50. Negotiating the contract is $1,000, whatever it is, right? It should be a la carte. So going back to your anchoring position, there's a part that wonders maybe the Richmond Fed is staking out like an anchoring position, right?
Yeah. Well, I think maybe the DOJ statement is just an anchoring thing as well, right?
So by moving the Overton window, it makes the DOJ's position now seem like the middle ground. Do you see what I'm saying? So imagine this, the Richmond Fed comes out with this and they just kind of say policymakers. It's not clear who they mean by this. Who are the policy, is it legislators?
Yeah.
Is it FTC? Who is this? But what they're saying to policymakers is a la carte. So if the anchor position now is something like, I'm just brainstorming here. It's something like the FTC promulgates a rule that says buyer agents must itemize every activity. Again, I agree.
Yeah,
like I see your face. The FTC comes out with a rule, real estate brokers must itemize every activity that they do for a buyer and invoice each separately. That would be the a la carte model, right? In other words, no more of this flat fee, hourly rate, like none of that, right? Which is what I've been advocating
for. Do these guys
for.
Even live in the real world? I mean
they're
asking
fucking regulators,
buyers.
Dude. Of course not. Like the regulators. I mean, it's the government,
Yeah.
I'm just saying there's an interesting point to be made there. Maybe they're doing that as the, we know this won't be accepted, but that position makes what the DOJ is suggesting like seem much more, much less drastic. What do you think?
Yeah. No, if you're dictating how I can run my,
talk about
hey, Mr. Restaurant,
right? Yeah.
Here's your menu format that I'm going to give you, right? I mean, it's just, what the fuck? I mean,
hey,
that's
man,
just
but
crazy
this isn't
town.
Exactly unknown. Like, I mean, you live in California for a crying out loud. Like, talk about, nanny state motherfuckers. Like, but it wasn't just California. Like, you walk into a restaurant, they have to list calories of each menu item.
Yeah.
Well, that's the government telling you how to run your business. And yet, we all accept it, right? So,
yeah.
This
well,
is not
going back,
crazy.
Yeah.
Right?
Going back to this kind of defiance kind of thing too, is they did a an interview with Damien, I forget his last name, but the new CEO of
Realtor.com. Yeah.
I think it was Davey that did the interview. And good interview. And one of the things that they brought up there, and I'm like, why haven't we heard this kind of narrative before? He's from Australia.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he says, one thing that he said that he hasn't really seen out there is like what a myth the Australian model is, right?
Mm-hmm.
They always talk about like in Europe they pay 2 or 2.5%. He says, well, let me tell you, in Australia it's 70% of them are auctions,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a government transfer fee.
Mm-hmm.
You have mortgages that reset every 2 years.
Yep.
So when you add all this shit up, and I think Zillow was doing a study on this or something. You're not, it's just an apples to oranges comparison to say,
of course,
for the DOJ or anybody to say, well, they pay less and those, well, you're not, this is not the same goddamn thing. right? If you can lock in a 30-year mortgage here in America for, you know, 4.9%, and another place you have to do this and you have no representation from a buyer also. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like the whole underpinnings, the whole narrative of, well, commissions need to be lower because they're the thing, you know, they're lower everywhere else. Well, that's just, I think, just a very surface level thing for them to kind of getting in everybody's shit. It's not the same, man. It's not the same. And I'm like, why isn't that? Why haven't, I don't think that I've really heard a lot of people, you know, say that.
Everyone's been saying that in the industry. I'm just saying, but it's falling on deaf ears.
Well, but I mean, anywhere during the kind of like the lawsuit, you know, catch mark and all that shit, course. I don't remember fucking hearing a lot of that shit.
No, there was a huge like thing because they denied some Australian expert or something. Fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter. At this point, here's the thing. I'm saying, you know what? It's time for us as an industry to start living in the reality-based community. Okay. And the reality-based community is, we have made all of those arguments for the last 3 years. It just hasn't gone anywhere. That's all. I mean, so at some point we have to accept that, right?
Yeah.
Now we could get conspiracy theory, because I do like conspiracy theories, right? But think about what you said about the Australian model, this government transfer tax, this blah, 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 you know, the mortgages reset every 2 years.
You have to pay to put your listings online, right? You know, which you don't hear.
Right. My thing is, okay, if that happens, who does that benefit? If we have a government transfer tax, we have mortgages that are 2 years, who does that benefit?
Right.
Benefits the government.
Yeah.
So if you can drive commissions, real estate commissions, down from 6% to say 2%, but the remaining 4% is taken up by various taxes.
The government. Fees,
the government. I'm just saying, like, if we want to get, like, we can get down that road. My point is that may all be true. It doesn't matter. Fact is, we made those arguments, falling on deaf ears, talking about you can't tell us how to run your business, run our business. That argument, that just doesn't fly when you have to get a government license in order to be in business, right? This is, real estate is not a free market, Wild West. Yeah. Let's get real about that. So all of that is out the fucking window. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of, and you're going to hate this fucking example, but you know, you're going to hate this example, but okay. Like, you know, unemployment's the lowest it's ever been in a year. The economy is doing well. Inflation has been dropping like a thing. And it just – nobody fucking cares. Nobody wants to give the current administration that credit. And they just have to accept it. It's like, yeah, these are facts. These are whatever. But people are, for whatever reason, don't want to take them. So they have to come up with another narrative to go on.
It's a little different because I don't think we're gaslighting – the DOJ, like the way the administration is gaslighting the American people, you know, so there's that difference. But I get your analogy. I get your general point.
Okay. All right.
So
the
issue then is, okay, as we're thinking about what's next, what do we do next, right? I'm saying let's start with reality-based community. Let's start with the fact that the DOJ and the FTC are going to do what they're going to do. The Richmond Fed paper, I think we have to read that as clear signal by our ruling elite bettors. Right, that this is kind of their heads at. What? Richmond,
the Richmond,
North
up Richmond. In Richmond.
There you go. Yeah. Right, and it is what it is. Now, what then happens next? Right, because as MLS execs, you know, I mean, I heard there was a whole lot of conversation around NAR relationship with MLS.
Okay, I'll talk about that. I got a nice.
That's a fascinating topic as well. Brokerage relationship with NAR. That's a fascinating topic. And I feel like I was asking about sort of the general mood because the MLS execs are in a really funny place, right? Because as you and I both know, because we've been insiders for so long in this specific subset, there's no love lost between the MLS community and NAR.
No, I was on display too a little bit.
Anybody wants to come out and bullshit and gaslight me and say, no, no, it's a close relationship. Like we're no. Get the fuck out of here. This has been a codependent relationship for as long as I've been in the industry. There's no love lost. And NAR sort of holds onto the MLS like, you know, it's the family jewels because it is. The MLS has been chafing under that oppressive regime by NAR for years and years and years, right? So I'm thinking maybe the defiance is not necessarily to the DOJ or to the whatever. It's to NAR. Like, get off my back. I mean, am I misreading that? Like, give me your thoughts.
No, I mean, so they had a session called, you know, discussing the NAR and MLS relationship, right? And Kevin Sears was there. Right. I met him, right? Yeah. Impressed with him. He had a good interview. A lot more straight talk, right? His things were like kind of sports analogies, and was like, listen, we lost, right? We got to have another game plan. We got to move on, and you know, whatever. We got to just, everybody does their job.
Yeah,
you know. So I appreciated his kind of message. I also appreciated that, you know, I think it's smart here. Although the guy's traveling, you know, I was talking about his travel schedule, and he said some stuff on stage too. But he's got almost like a year and a half term because of the way it worked out. So I think some steady leadership for that amount of time is actually going to be good for all this stuff.
Sure,
we'll see what happens. You know, they were really, you know, it was Tim Dane and Art, and I think he got conned into getting up there at the last minute, was on the stage for this, and Brian, and they were kind of dancing around the edges, and then Tim just kind of, you know, went out and said it, and I think Andrea reported, like, you know, we need to, like, break apart this, the NAR from the MLS, right?
What he said, supposedly. I recorded a podcast with Tim on my Notorious Pod channel.
Okay, because that's what Andrea was putting on Twitter, right?
Yeah. I don't want to steal the thunder, but basically his thing was, it wasn't really that we need to break up. It was that the rule was in the wrong place, that the linkage between MLS and association should be an association rule, not an MLS rule.
It's a technicality. His statement is there was
that
a
was
lot
not
of
how it's perceived.
Well, here's another thing that was hilarious, and this has to do with you and I.
Yeah,
is one of the things he leveled out there. Says, and this was exactly on the thing that you reported about, where the funds run out back in 2019, and Tim said something effective, like, you know, one thing that I really would appreciate is that if I would hear news like that instead of, you know, two podcasters robbing Greg, I have to learn about this and not from freaking NAR, right? And that got a kind of a laugh at the crowd. And I'm like the crowd kind of bowing down a little. So yeah, yokels are out there giving the news out before they even hear it officially from them, right?
Let me put this out there officially. If NAR PR would like to come on this show at any time to break news, we are anytime. Let us know.
Yeah.
But you do have to appear, because we're not going to read your goddamn press releases that are written by your incompetent fucking fools. Like, send us somebody good like Kevin Sears. He's actually pretty good. I like him. I liked Tracy. I thought Tracy was very good too. But in any event. Okay, so divorce? What do you think?
Yeah,
is it
man.
Marriage
I don't
counseling?
Know.
Is this like a trial separation? Like, what are we looking at here? Is this divorce? Is this marriage counseling?
So classic. I mean, you're saying the word divorce, and again, a topic six, 7 years ago.
Remember that presentation at Las Vegas?
Oh, yeah.
MLS?
Yeah,
my one and only, I think, like, because they're like never inviting that guy back here again, you know. But like I said, this is a codependent relationship. Like, this is bad. You need to divorce for both of your sakes.
Yeah, right?
I mean,
yeah.
What's your vibe?
Something's got to give, right? I think the fact that, you know, these things just take so much time to go through the court systems. It's going to give everybody a bit more. I think that favors NAR, where they just keep the status quo because it just kind of drones on, right? I know MLSs have been having meeting about how can we break up and do that, but I think a lot of them are discovering it's just they're so intertwined in different places it's almost impossible to do that. So I think that by those things alone, it just becomes like a non-starter. So. I don't know how you change that, though.
A loveless marriage.
A loveless marriage. A loveless marriage, yeah. of convenience.
We're staying together for the kids.
For the kids.
Right.
We're staying together for the listings, right?
Right. And they're both cheating on each other like crazy. I mean, God, that's an awful marriage. Needs to dissolve.
Oh, man.
Or it is. Maybe some really good counselors. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, come on the show, man. Come on the show. We'll be those marriage counselors for you.
Okay.
When you say this, how do you feel? How does that make you feel, NAR? How does that make you feel?
Have you ever been through marriage counseling?
A couple times, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I have, and I thought it was the most useless fucking thing I've ever been through. It's just my opinion. From my experience, right? It's like...
Yeah, the counseling that I've always received has been, to me, they just kind of knock you back in the right direction.
Okay.
Right? I've never sat through whatever, but it's like, okay, just knock us back on there, yeah. Give us some tools, knock us back on there. Yeah. Okay, we're good now, right? I mean, those are the kind of things.
As a, you know, divorcee, like I went through that during my whatever, and it's like, this is completely useless. We just save the money and just immediately file for divorce. That's where I came up with a 7-year marriage and all that. Like, marriage counseling should happen before the marriage. You know, but that's a whole separate topic.
Which goes back to a whole your app idea, right? So,
oh man, any other before we dive into the app idea? Any other what other takeaways were there for you, Clarity?
No, it's just good to see. I mean, like you said, it was a good to see a gathering of everybody there. But you know that defiance kind of was in different places. The Australian myth, you know, the DOJ's thing about, you know, what they wanted to see happen. So I think like, you know, to me, the battle lines are kind of drawn now, right? So everybody now reorganizes around what's the next steps here. You know, and there's been some other things, you know, like Berkshire Hathaway was added to something. So it's obvious they really want to go to Warren Buffett's wallet, you know, directly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Howard Hanna was dismissed. Who else was dismissed? Berkshire Hathaway, I guess I was a little bit oldest out of that. And then I guess the next big thing is like, are they going to merge all these things, right? Is that
of course they are. Yeah.
The thing we're waiting for, yeah.
Of course they are. I've already predicted that, but I'm not real clear. Like, did they talk about MDL, the multi-district litigation, at all? Did anybody give a real update to explain what that is?
I don't think so, no.
Because I think there's this myth that like MDL means that it's one single case and that MLSs and brokers who have not yet been sued can just use MDL to reach a settlement. I don't really think that's how MDL works.
I think they talked a little bit about that. Yeah, it's not like – I think it's like we're not out of the woods yet on any of this stuff, right?
It's not a single case is the most important thing, right? It's just a single judge basically to deal with the pretrial stuff, but doesn't mean that all of the underlying cases – and the whole point behind it is use MDL and some of these like flagship cases, right, to kind of clearly signal to everybody else, here's how your case is going to go, so you might as well settle, right? But I don't think it's one national settlement. That's, or maybe I'm wrong, and that's why I was curious if, you know, one of the three illustrious legal beagles had any explanation.
I don't remember exact. I mean, it's been a little bit, a bit of time since then, but. Yeah, you didn't. You know, the bankrupt word. You know, the BK word is being used more liberally now.
Oh,
I think as a strategy. I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
You know, I just as we've been saying forever. I mean, it's just in the best interest for NAR to settle, but they won't. You know, they don't want to settle unless it's going to. They don't have to worry about this again. So we'll have to see what happens there. There were other questions about like a new administration. Would that matter? No, it's not going to matter if a new administrator comes in.
Probably
these are court cases that are,
But
I mean, it's just
an FTC
settle.
But I don't think the new administration, like, I don't think Trump is going to make a difference. I think if you wanted to make a difference, it would need to have been Ramaswamy. Or you and I talked about that, right?
Yeah.
Because Trump is not going to smash the government the way that Ramaswamy wanted to smash the government, right?
Yeah.
Maybe RFK.
Well, he was just – yeah, I mean, that's all budgetary, right? I mean, you're going right at the heart of the issue of these departments.
Correct. But I don't necessarily see that happening. So, all right. Well, that's thanks for the report. And as promised, we're going to close this episode out with the greatest app idea I think I've ever come up with.
Besides the BMA, right? Okay.
Besides the BMA. That's more than an app. That is a whole platform. What I'm describing is just a simple app. Okay. And I'm saying this publicly in the hopes that someone out there might actually make this, because I'm not going to make it. Greg, you might make it, you know, like this has zero conflict.
I mean,
I like the idea. You know?
Yeah, I like the idea.
All right. So maybe we should collaborate and, you know, make this happen. And if anybody wants to help Greg and I build this app, let us know.
Okay, well, let's hear the elevator pitch.
The elevator pitch is it's Tinder for parents. Okay. It's a dating app that is going to attempt to bring elements of the arranged marriage culture that is very much still in place throughout Asia to the US. So what do I mean? Here's how it works. Okay. Parents would upload their children's profile. Okay. And then the parents get to swipe on the profiles. And when there's a match, the connection is between the parents. The kids aren't involved in this at all, right? And then the parents decide, you know what? I think like my son should meet your daughter for coffee.
Now, instead of pictures, do you use like CVs or resumes?
Use all of it. Use all of it. Because they're parents. So, you know, like, I'll see all the photos. And I think America's ready for this product now. Now, I know you agree. I'd love to hear from anyone who disagrees.
Hey, listen, if I could help choose who's going to marry my daughter, absolutely.
Right?
Right?
I think absolutely, it makes so much sense. Plus, here's the thing. This is why arranged marriages have a better track record than the U.S., okay? Because I think parents know their kids way better than kids know themselves, especially when they're young. Since they're like 21, 22, like, no, son, you're actually kind of lazy. You need a woman who's actually going to be like into taking care of you versus, you know, hey, whatever. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of a stickler about this. You're going to need a man who's going to be down with that, right? I think parents know their kids better. So we're going to have a much better time talking to other parents. Hey, this is what my son's like. This is what my daughter's like. Do we see a fit?
So, right. So in your vision of that, do the parents have their own conversations first?
Yes.
And then based upon that conversation, they say, yes, let's like arrange it.
Right.
And you're saying also, because I was asking, this isn't like a private thing where they say, oh, you know, I happen to meet somebody and I think you should talk to their daughter.
Yeah.
This should be all transparent.
I think the kids should
be I don't think Tinder is the right thing. It's like an eHarmony.
Yeah.
Tinder is just a transactional thing.
Tinder is just about getting laid. No, this is not that. This is like trying to get married, right? Trying to marry your children off. And I think the benefit to this is this, right? Number one, if you're a kid, because my mom did set me up on one date, right? In my entire life.
Oh, right on. Okay.
I went to her and said, wait, I'm Korean. Like, why aren't you setting me up on these arranged marriage dates type thing. So she set me up on one. It was the worst date I've ever been on, but it was hilarious. And I was like, I want more, you know, but she never hooked it up.
I want everybody to imagine Rob Hahn on a blind date. Okay. Everybody put that in their head. What that poor girl.
No, what are you talking about? Poor girl. Poor me. I show up on the date. This is when I was still in law school and I was a pretty lefty guy in law school. Okay.
Oh, okay. Like, wow.
Way more left than you. I would condemn you as when I was in law school. Okay. The girl shows up. She's a literal communist. And she starts criticizing me because I want to be a lawyer serving the capitalist, whatever.
Oh, regime.
Right. So at one point, literally in our first date, one of my questions to her was, do you have a bank account? Because if you do, I got news for you. Your money is going to serve the capitalist regime. So, you know, maybe cut out the condemnation.
Oh, man. The fly in the wall for that thing would have been fantastic.
Me. Not for her. Poor me. Okay. But anyway.
There's another podcast. There's another idea there. Podcast, just audio of first dates.
A lot of them would be really boring, though. A lot of them would be really boring. If you're interested, we'll call, I don't know, eHarmony for parents. I think this thing would sell like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Oh, so the first thing is that, right? The parents know their kids. The second thing, and this is important, if you meet a girl on your own, right? At least this was the way it was for me when I was 25, 26, right? You just go out to a party, you meet a girl, you're just thinking hookup, right? Like, it's just casual. If you're being sent on a date that your parents picked,
yeah, there's an implied
emphasis, right?
Yeah.
So I think even the first date, look, it's no commitment. It's just meet for coffee, see if you like each other. You're still walking in. Both parties are kind of walking in. Our parents kind of like each other. Our parents thought this was a good idea. It would be a different set of expectations, which I think leads to a healthier dating culture.
Well, I was surprised that you were telling me that that arranged marriages are more successful.
Far more successful.
But then after thinking about it, it's like, you know, so rando that, you know, people, you know, first time I met my parents, my you know,
your in-laws,
I really hadn't met, you know,
right.
in-laws until,
right.
you know, very close to the wedding or something. It's just kind of insane right. in a way, right?
Right. And yeah. that's one of the advantages of arranged marriage. Like the in-laws, they already like each other. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my idea. A bonus content for this, right? Hey, man, if you are interested in helping Greg and me make eHarmony for parents, I'll come up with a good name. Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Matchmaker.net, whatever. We'll come up with a good name. If you're interested in helping
Isn't there a name? There's got to be a name for a Korean matchmaker.
Yeah, for Korean, it's not great. It's Sun, right? And it's, hold on, I actually pulled this up. Sun 보는 거, right? That's what you'd say.
Sun 보는 거.
The person is.
Wasn't there like another name for like a Jewish matchmaker? I mean, there's all every culture has that kind of thing,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just Japanese call it Nakado, I think.
Okay.
Let me see. And then Chinese call it Chinese. What's Chinese? Yeah. The Japanese is Nakado. Chinese is whatever. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of these terms. If you are interested in helping Greg build this app, Greg and me build this app, let us know. If you think it's a terrible idea, let us know. If you have any issues with anything we talked about real estate, let us know.
Let us know.
All right, everybody.
All right, man.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Ciao.
Listen, content is everything. Two Brothers Creative makes it look easy. Right now, business owners really only have two options. The first option is hire a big firm. Now, this big firm's going to come in, make you think that they invented all the algorithms, and start charging you thousands of dollars every month. You don't want to do that. Second option is to do it yourself. Well, that means you got to learn SEO, SEM, copywriting, marketing techniques on the web. Ugh, you should be really focusing on your own product. But now there's a third option. It's called Content in a Box. Give Two Brothers Creative 30 minutes a week and they'll handle everything. Plus, they'll show you how to bring it in-house later on. They'll rebuild your marketing foundation and give you tools and techniques and a new marketing playbook that'll actually produce real results and help you grow your business. Two Brothers Creative will give you the confidence and know-how to tell the SEOs and SEMs and all those other acronyms to get fucked. You're in control now. Get started today at thecontentbox.com.